Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Well, here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Doug Voss about the Korean War. Then Army vet Terry Johnson will share about how veterans can deal with the VA in the area of disabilities. And Diane Raver will review the movie of the month. Of course, we'll conclude with the military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to introduce Army vet Doug Voss, who served in Korea. I'm not sure where his knowledge of all this came from, but glad you could join us, Doug. Welcome aboard.
Thank you for inviting me, Denny.
Where did your interest in the Korean War come from? Was it your station there or other things?
Yes, I was. November of 68 till December of 69, I was in 2nd Battalion, 23rd Infantry, 2nd Infantry Division near Freedom Bridge, and about five clicks away from the JSA, which is also known as Panmunjom.
Okay, so you were in what we might call an active part of the area.
Yes, we did receive combat pay. Hostile fire pay was $65 back in those days.
Yep, I understand that. Why was there a North and South Korea? How did all that happen?
Well, it actually happened, when Russia was moving in to North Korea to occupy North Korea. The United States was supposed to occupy the southern part of Korea as part of the deal after the war was over. Japan was supposed to be booted out of both North and South Korea. However, there was no boundary between where the spheres of influence were supposed to be. So there was two young lieutenant colonels by the name of Dean Rusk and Charles Bonesteel who were tasked by the DOD to go over to the State Department, where they were supposed to find, and this was ASAP, a border between the two Koreas, because they did not want Russia to go way into the south. So they went to the State Department. There was no map of Korea. Wouldn't you know it, as they were walking out of their office, they saw a National Geographic with Korea on the front cover. Opened it up, and what was in there? A map. They took it back to the secure office that they had, and open that map way up, and they saw on there the 38th parallel. And remind you that this is ASAP. It all went to the State Department, over to Joseph Stalin. He okayed it almost immediately, just like that. So the 38th parallel, which is what they found, is the border that was used all through the Korean War.
Yep. So basically, Korea had been completely occupied by Japan when Japan surrendered the war. The Soviet Union occupied the northern, just like you said. We occupied the southern for disarmament. The plan was for it to be united after a brief period. That never happened. And here we are. So how did the war begin, the Korean War? What happened?
The Korean War started on June 25th, 1950. 80,000 North Korean troops and 150 Russian-made T-34 tanks crossed the 38th parallel. That's the violation of the sovereignty of South Korea. They were on the move. They were quick, and they captured Seoul within 3 days. The poor, ill-trained South Korean military and what few U.S. troops were in Korea were pushed into the Pusan perimeter. That was, it was really hard to take. That's the swift move of the North Korean military.
Well, we didn't see it coming, did we? Neither the South Korean military nor the small force.
No, the South Korean didn't, but Stalin did give permission to North Korea, to Kim Il-sung. That was the first dictator of North Korea.
Yeah, but the U.S. forces that were in South Korea didn't see it coming either. They shocked us.
No, it was actually really a total surprise. I mean, intel was hardly available at that time. There was no expectation. The first thing was that 38th parallel was supposed to be temporary. And then the two Koreas would be united, hopefully, but that never happened, as you know.
Okay, and I know then President Harry Truman went to the UN and asked them to intervene. The Soviet Union could have vetoed it, but they were boycotting the UN because they were mad at it for some reason. And the UN authorized what Harry Truman called a police action in Korea and asked the US to sort of take the lead. And we did.
And that is true, Denny. That is absolutely true. Police action is one of those phrases that Korean War vets hate, because police action just minimizes that was one of the cruelest, most toughest wars that we've ever been in. But that name seems to have stuck. But that is true. Harry Truman did name it police action. General Walton Walker was ordered by MacArthur to go to the Pusan perimeter to help hold that perimeter for the next 6 weeks. MacArthur sent the 25th ID and the 1st Cav from Japan to the Pusan perimeter, and it was led by General Walton Walker. They held on to it for 6 weeks until units from the United States and other UN nations arrived. So that was the very first phase of the war right there.
It went on. We could talk about this a lot longer than we have time. But at first, once Eisenhower got things cooking, we were winning, weren't we?
Oh, yes. I'll tell you what, General Walton Walker is really South Korea's hero. You would seem to think that MacArthur was, but reason is because he held it on to that small section of land in the southeast corner of South Korea until our troops started to arrive. And then once the troops were arrived, the 2nd Division was the first to arrive, and in many other divisions and UN nations from around the world. And then comes the second phase. This is one of my favorite parts. The second phase is September 15th, when MacArthur's plan to land at Incheon and offload the 1st Marines and the 7th Infantry Division. It was an exceedingly successful endeavor, very bold, and it worked. There still were some things to take care of, though, once they landed. There was the issue of Seoul. They had to take Seoul from the North Koreans. The next day, September 16th, the Pusan perimeter began their offensive. And within a matter of less than 2 weeks, they broke out of the perimeter. They head up north and they hook up with the 1st Marines, 7 ID. And then we had the initiative. This is really where things for the United States UN forces was looking good. They took Seoul back, and then they marched north across the 30th parallel, took Pyongyang, the capital of North Korea. They kept moving, and it was starting to get a little colder up there. It was getting late September, early October, and North Korea, just like in the United States, it gets colder first up there than it does in South Korea.
And there's a lot more to this story, but we don't have time to review it. So you're going to have to get your history book out, because what happened then was China got in, and it got messy, and it all ended up with a ceasefire. And a ceasefire is not the end of a war. So we're still officially at war. And it's pretty much ended up the same way it started.
That is so true. The armistice still holds, even though that there were a lot of hot spots all along the DMZ since the end of the war up until even when the rocks took over from the United States.
Doug, we got just less than a minute left. Talk to us about the Korean War Veterans of America.
Yes, the KWVA is an organization that is for anyone who served in Korea after World War II. And I'm talking the occupation era, the war, and the defense of Korea. And if you're interested in about the KWVA, the website is actually very simple to remember, KWVA.us. Lots of information on that page. You'll catch up a lot about the Korean War and the organization. We were very tight with South Korea. Here's what I'd like to say is Kachi Kapchi Da, which in Korean means together we go. And that is how tight our alliance is. And we support that alliance.
I wish we could go more into it. Maybe we will in the future. Doug, thank you. Thank you for what you shared. Thank you for serving our nation. Thank you for being willing to be sharing in this. I'm proud to call you a friend.
Thank you, Denny. Thank you very much.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to balance on one foot for 3 minutes, then do the same thing on the other foot. This while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to introduce Terry Ranger Johnson. Terry was an Army Ranger, and he's really focused on helping veterans get VA support, the support they deserve. And there's lots of vets who deserve VA support but aren't getting it, so Terry's efforts are very, very appropriate. Welcome, brother.
Hey, I'm so excited to be here, Colonel. Thank you for having me and my son, Gino, today. We're just excited to be here.
Great. Terry, when and why did you decide to join the Army? Were you drafted? What happened?
No, actually, this is a phenomenal question. Thank you so much for asking that, Colonel. Well, when I was in the seventh grade, I saw this crazy movie called The Green Berets, starring my hero, John Wayne. And I just thought I could be a Green Beret. And that led to me joining the Army at the age of 17 and doing 20 years. And of course, I did a couple years in the Ranger Battalion. I was a drill sergeant, did 1st and 75th Ranger Battalion. And I spent 11 years at the Green Beret and 7th Special Forces Group and other SF organizations. So blame it on John Wayne. He kind of indoctrinated me with that movie, The Green Beret.
So you sort of came in with the vision of being a Ranger and being Special Ops Green Beret. That was your vision from the beginning.
It absolutely was. And the crazy part is, Colonel, I couldn't swim. My ASVAB scores were too low. And I tell everybody the story. It actually took me 7 years when I joined the Army to be able to pass the Ranger School swim test because I flunked it and ended up getting the Fort Benning as a drill sergeant. And I had this little lifeguard teach me how to swim. And I always tell people, you know, you can't make excuses. If there's something bad enough that you want, you got to go for it. And I decided I was going to learn how to swim and drink half the pool at Fort Benning, Georgia, until I achieved my goal. And that's my story. And I'm sticking with it.
Hey, man, I understand. Where were some of the places you served?
Wow. My first duty station, I was regular Army. I was a leg. So Fort Lewis, Washington, my first duty station. I was actually stationed in Berlin, Germany from 1982 to 84 when they had the Berlin Wall. Uh-huh. And I had talk about leadership, and you understand this, Colonel. I had a platoon sergeant. I wanted to leave Germany and go Ranger School. And he said, no, you're not. And Sergeant Higgs said, you're going to go become a drill sergeant. So at the age of 21, I went to drill sergeant school, graduated drill sergeant school and did that for 2 years at Fort Benning. Left there and went to Ranger school and then left there and went to the 1st and 75th Ranger Battalion in Savannah, Georgia. So after that, ended up going to Special Forces Qualification Course and going to Fort Bragg and spending the rest of my career in and out of Fort Bragg in Special Forces, 7th Special Forces Group.
So you weren't bored?
No. No, absolutely. And listen, I tell everybody, man, I'm living the American dream, man. I mean, come on, man. You know, I got a chance to travel around the world, do things I never thought I would do, end up in places like Panama, Bolivia, Honduras, the country of Jordan, Spain. And I'm a country boy from East Texas. You know, I grew up hauling hay and cutting pulpwood. And all of a sudden now I'm doing a water jump into Key West, Florida. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's like it's something you see on TV. I mean, this was it. I mean, I would always wake up, you know, somewhere in the jungle of Panama or Puerto Rico and say, I get to do this. It literally was never, I got to do it. It was, can you believe I get to fly on a Black Hawk helicopter 30 feet above the ocean with Rangers sitting on the side of these skids ready to do our thing? Come on, man. It's like a movie.
I relate. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Terry Ranger Johnson. Okay, Terry, tell us about your business now. What do you do and why?
Yeah, this is so great. Now I'm going to bring my son in just a little bit to say some things about what we do. I retired from the Army in 2000, okay, after 20 years. And after 120 jumps out of airplanes, I had degenerative disc L5-S1. And at the age of 37, I could barely walk to the mailbox. I would do it again. I'm not that vet that's grumpy. I'd do it again if I had a chance. But I started trying to get my VA benefits. And the first time I went to the VA, they gave me 10% disability for tinnitus. I didn't even put in for tinnitus. You know, I walked in there with a hurt back and they gave me 10% for tinnitus. And that started this journey. And it literally took me 17 years to go from that 10% to what I felt I should have gotten day one when I retired was 100% disability because I did the job and I had the injuries on my body. And when I got to 100%, I simply wrote about what I did, not to start a business. I wrote it out of my frustration. You know, the Bible says, be angry, but don't sin. I tell everybody, I'm probably still angry at the VA, but I don't think I've sinned against the VA, you know. And my son, Gino, saw what I was doing during COVID and said, Dad, we can make that an online course. And that's why I kind of bring him in to tell what he did for me.
That's awesome. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was talking to my dad back in 2020 and I didn't know much at all about this process. You know, I didn't personally serve myself. But, you know, I was hearing my dad's story and, of course, seeing him growing up, I saw the way that the injuries impacted him. And then I learned in 2020 that there were benefits out there that not only could have benefited our entire family, but I could have gone to college for free and things of that nature that we missed out on because really of a lack of knowledge and understanding of the process and the realization of what was out there for him. And so that really drove a passion in me to say, hey, we need to share what you're already teaching to other veterans to as many veterans as possible. And that's how we started Champions for Veterans and started teaching what we call the Ranger Method, is the step-by-step process of going after your VA disability benefits. And been doing that since started in July 2020, so almost 3 years at this point. And it's been really exciting to see people's lives change by what we get to do every day.
Well, I understand what you're saying because I'm working with around the VA to get some disability approved. I think I've achieved my goal, but it's been a long, tedious fight. And having somebody who knows what they're doing can counsel me along the way would have made life a lot easier, I can assure you, because I've been retired almost 40 years and I'm still playing that silly game. Do you have an example, a story of somebody who you were able to help?
Absolutely. I got a Vietnam vet that lives about a mile from me. He rides his bike through my neighborhood, and I didn't even know he was a Vietnam vet to probably 8 or 9 months ago. We started talking, and I told him, I said, well, brother, I want to come and help you. And so he's like, Ranger, I don't have any medical records. I was in Vietnam, got back in, you know, early 70s. I said, don't worry about what you don't have. What do you have? And I started working with him in October, get this, October of 2022. And he just got to 90%. It took 6 months from 0 to 90%. And that's no records. Listen, let me tell you what he didn't have. He had all civilian records, of course. He never went to the VA one day. Uh-huh. Didn't even have a VA ID card. Okay. And I take people through. People understand I'm a drill sergeant. So I teach step-by-step method of training, not we hope, we wish. No, put your left foot here, put your right foot there. Don't do that. Well, why not? Because I said so. Right? I mean, it took me 17 years to go from 10% to 100. And like I tell guys, I'm just teaching what I did myself. And so when this veteran got to 90% in 6 months, a Vietnam vet, 52 years after he got home from Vietnam, now he's finally getting benefits. And it's not over yet. I'll go to his house, as a matter of fact, on this Wednesday, and I'll continue the process because he just got a VA doctor, and we continue the process of helping him get that last 10%. That's a success story.
That's awesome. We're about out of time. How can listeners plug into you, contact you, your business, get help from you?
I would say, yeah, our website is www.championsforveterans.com. That's champions with an S. forveterans.com, and even have a gift for your listeners. They can go to www.championsforveterans.com/free-ebook. Now, what that is just a book that they can download to give them some step-by-step guidance in the process. They can read it, kind of get going with the process. And if they'd like to kind of get on a consultation with us from our website, they can go on and go to our website, click schedule a consultation. They'll be able to meet with somebody on our team and get started with the process and get encouraged to go after the benefits that they deserve.
That's awesome. I appreciate the story, but I appreciate what you're doing for veterans now. Thank you, Terry, for what you're doing to help vets. God bless you, brother.
No, Colonel. Thank you so much, brother. You're such an American hero, and we appreciate it. And I want to tell you and your listeners to stay in the fight.
And Gino, I'm delighted to see a son helping a father moving forward. That's what family's about, bro.
Absolutely. Love to do it. Thanks so much for having us, Colonel.
Thank you, gents, for joining us. We have to stay in touch. We're friends. We're brothers.
Yes, sir.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver, then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time to review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Glad to have you back, Diane. You've been a member of the team for years and years now.
Yes, I'm a tried and true member of the team. I believe it's 6 years, Denny.
Yeah, I think so, since we were in Texas.
That's right. So here we are with another film for our viewers. I hope they enjoyed it as much as we did. I chose this one because I thought it spoke to our humanity. And I know that a lot of veterans suffer from many things like PTSD, but there's always someone worse off than you. And I think it's good to keep things in perspective.
Yes, and so, particularly as we travel the world, particularly in some of the areas that have war.
Oh, yes.
We see people who really have a tough life and really are hurting. And we have to have that sensitivity. You know, I can see why you and love the Garden State Film Festival, because the films you find for us are so interesting and thoughtful. They're amazing. And you get to deal in so many that we don't ever see.
But right.
But this movie, The Homeless Boy Meets a Blind and Deaf Man Who Changes His Life Forever, what an amazing story that you, well, I hope it does for everybody what it did for me. It gave me plenty to think about.
Yes. And again, that was our main purpose in starting this program. So I think that sometimes having a film that's just, again, about our humanity speaks to more than just the entertainment portion of what we do.
Yes. As we've said on this show, talking to each other many times, our goal is to encourage people to think about things, come to your own conclusions, but here's some things to be thinking about. And, you know, putting that old brain to work every once in a while is a good idea.
I agree.
Okay, here's some comments by our listeners. We had quite a few on this, not surprisingly.
Oh, good.
So a bunch of black teenage boys hanging together after dark. Well, black or whatever color, teenage right. boys out after dark is not uncommon. Then they all go home but one, because he has no place to go. And, you know, in one respect, it's sort of odd that if the guys were friends, that they didn't know that one of them had no place to go.
Well, that I thought of that, too. But then, of course, they have to go home to their mothers or whatever situation they're living in who might not. I mean, I was the kind of mother that took everybody, you know, all the strays, you know, dogs, cats, people, whatever. But not everybody is able to do that. So, for whatever reason, that poor child had nowhere to go.
Yeah. So he texts his girlfriend, So at least he had a contact there and he had a phone that worked. Then he runs off a beggar. Well, I guess so. What would he give him?
Right.
Then he walks around and he sees a man standing tall at a corner next to a pole. And he's not moving at all and he's smiling. Matter of fact, throughout the movie, that guy was smiling.
He was, you know, if it was a fairy tale, it would be when, you know, the old lady comes to the door and the bad sisters don't give a cup of water and the good sister does. It was a beautiful, really a beautiful film. I hope everyone enjoyed it as much as I do.
And this young man, as bad a situation as he was in and was living in, still had some good qualities that was a part of who he is. So he approaches him, and the man has a card that says, he's deaf and blind, tap him. I've never seen anything like that before. Of course, I'm not sure I've ever known deaf and blind. I've known some deaf and I've known some blind. But I guess if you're going to survive in that environment, that's what you do.
Right.
So that by itself was educational to me.
Mm-hmm.
It never occurred to me what you'd do in that situation. Because again, I would think that in most cases, if I had a relative or a friend who was deaf and blind, I wouldn't want him going out alone.
And especially obviously in a neighborhood where it was a little dicey. Let's just.
Of course, how would he have known?
Well, there is that.
So this deaf and blind man's looking for a bus stop. So the boy faces him towards it and then leads him there. And they sit together on the bench. That does sort of make sense. The young boy is alone. And here's somebody who's worse off than he is, probably not financially based on the way the guy was dressed, but certainly needing help and learning how to communicate with somebody like that. Well, I bet that was one strange, but two interesting and challenging to that young man.
But what a good soul the young man was to stay with him and, you know, really, when they get to the bus driver, really make the bus driver own that he's going to do what he's supposed to, you know?
Yeah. The boy asked the guy where he's been. He said he's been on a date. And he asked the boy. The boy gives him the same answer, which wasn't true. But that's interesting. I think I'd like to meet the girl sometime that he was on a date with. But that's beside the point.
Right.
Then they find out when the bus is coming. He finds out, taps on his hand. The guy's always smiling. A bus passes him. The girlfriend responds by text. The boy doesn't respond. He stays with the guy. The guy wants something to drink, so he takes him to a store, takes his wallet, pays for it, but keeps some money, confronts the store owner for looking at the blind guy funny. So he's now the advocate.
Right.
You know, that's a good quality. Back to the bus stop. They sleep. The bus comes, as you mentioned before, he's very careful to make sure the bus driver knows what to do. The boy looks at the man's notepad, and there's a question, may I kiss you, which obviously was when he was on his date.
On his date, right.
Yes. The bus arrives, gives him instructions, and they say goodbye. And off the bus, and the boy sees a sleeping homeless guy with a cup nearby. And he takes the money that he took from the blind guy and puts it in the cup. It changed his life forever, didn't it?
Yep. I mean, what a beautiful story, really.
It truly is. And there's so many messages there that it's beyond belief.
Yeah, you almost have to watch it a couple of times.
Uh-huh. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. And the film festival won't be till next year, but take a minute on where you stand now. Are you still taking films for it?
Yes. If you know a filmmaker or a composer or an actor, please have them go to www.gsff.org. It's our call for entries is open until November 1st for our 2024 festival. And we hope to see a lot of the listeners, friends and relatives, and possibly themselves submit to us. It would be great.
And also come to the festival the end of March, right?
Yes, March 21 through 24 in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
And it is amazing. And if you forget all of that, contact me, Denny, at frontlinesoffreedom.com. I got all the information. Diane, thank you. Thank you for this great film, for being a wonderful member of the Frontlines of Freedom team, for being a great friend. I really appreciate you. God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, Denny. It's always an honor and a great privilege to be with you.
We are a good team. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for the weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. Hey, about 60 this time. I want your ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
From ending our nation's endless wars, to making sure veterans get the care they deserve, to addressing our country's out-of-control spending problem, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing our nation. You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit cv4a.org to learn more, see how you can get involved, and join our movement. That's cv4a.org.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Army vet Ray found the discussion of not winning wars really interesting. He'd never thought about that before.
Ray, way too many people, including war planners, apparently have never thought of that and should. I hope we've learned our lesson.
And Ronald, an Air Force vet, found the interview with Mr. Vickers very interesting. That guy did so many important things. He does plan to get the book.
Ronald, you're in for a good and long read about a very interesting career. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 26 June 1945, during World War II, the Charter for the United Nations was signed in San Francisco. The UN was born of perceived necessity as a means of better arbitrating international conflict and negotiating peace than was provided for by the old League of Nations. The growing Second World War became the real impetus for the U.S., Britain, and the Soviet Union to begin formulating the original U.N. Declaration signed by 26 nations in January 1942 as a formal act of opposition to Germany, Italy, and Japan, the Axis powers. But now that the war, at least in the West, was over, negotiating and maintaining the peace was the practical responsibility of the new UN Security Council, made up of the US, Great Britain, France, the Soviet Union, and China. Each would have veto power. A year later, after World War II was over and won, Winston Churchill called for the UN to employ its charter in the service of creating a new united Europe, united in its opposition to communist expansion, East and West. Given the composition of the Security Council, this would prove easier said than done.
Oh boy, is that true. And on the 25th of June, 1950, armed forces from communist North Korea smashed into South Korea, setting off the Korean War. The U.S., acting under the auspices of the United Nations, sprang to the defense of South Korea. The forces of many nations fought a bloody, frustrating war for the next 3 years. Korea, a former Japanese possession, had been divided into zones of occupation following World War II. U.S. forces accepted the surrender of Japanese forces in southern Korea, while Soviet forces did the same in northern Korea. Like in Germany, however, the temporary division soon became permanent. The Soviets established a communist regime in North Korea, while the U.S. became the main source of finance and military support for South Korea. On June 25, 1950, North Korean forces surprised the South Korean army and the small U.S. force stationed in the country, and quickly headed towards the capital city of Seoul. We responded by pushing a resolution through the UN Security Council calling for military assistance to South Korea. Russia was not present to veto the action, as it was boycotting the Security Council at the time, which is why the UN actually did something useful. With this resolution in hand, President Harry Truman rapidly dispatched U.S. land, air, and sea forces to Korea to engage in what he called a police action. Our intervention turned the tide, and U.S. and South Korean forces marched into North Korea. This action, however, prompted the massive intervention of communist Chinese forces in late 1950. The war in Korea subsequently bogged into a bloody stalemate, and in 1953, the U.S. and North Korea signed a ceasefire that ended the conflict. The ceasefire agreement also resulted in the continued division of North and South Korea at just about the same geographical point as before the conflict. A ceasefire doesn't end a war, so the war technically continues. Then China became North Korea's sponsor and now provides most of the resources that nation needs. The Korean War was the first hot war of the Cold War. Over 55,000 U.S. troops were killed. Korea was the first limited war, one in which the U.S. aim was not the complete total defeat of the enemy, but rather the limited goal of protecting South Korea. For the U.S. government, such an approach seemed to be the only rational option in order to avoid a Third World War and to keep it from stretching finite American resources too thinly around the globe. It proved to be a frustrating experience for the American people, who were used to the kind of total victory that had been achieved in World War II. The public found the concept of limited war difficult to understand and support, and the Korean War never really gained popular support.
You know, Colonel, I just recently read a book by Jeff Shera called The Frozen Hours. It was all about that Chosin Reservoir. Just an awesome, awesome book, and I would recommend that to our readers.
Yeah, and that was one heck of a fight.
And on 26 June 1993, in retaliation for an Iraqi plot to assassinate former President George Bush, during his April visit to Kuwait, President Bill Clinton ordered U.S. warships to fire Tomahawk cruise missiles at Iraqi intelligence headquarters in downtown Baghdad. On April 13, 1993, the day before George Bush was scheduled to visit Kuwait and be honored for his victory in the Persian Gulf War, Kuwaiti authorities foiled a car bomb plot to assassinate him. 14 suspects, most of them Iraqi nationals, were arrested, and the next day their massive car bomb was discovered in Kuwait City. Citing compelling evidence of the direct involvement of Iraqi intelligence in the assassination attempt, President Clinton ordered a retaliatory attack against their alleged headquarters in the Iraqi capital on June 26. 23 Tomahawk missiles, each costing more than $1 million, were fired off the USS Peterson in the Red Sea and the cruiser USS Chancellorsville in the Persian Gulf, destroying the building and, according to Iraqi accounts, killing several civilians.
Hey, that happens in war. We don't try to kill civilians, but it happens. And that's the military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, two men wearing black ski masks entered the East Hartford, Connecticut clothing store just after 10:30 p.m. on Thursday with the intention of robbing the store. The store owner was subsequently shot in the back by one of the suspects, but managed to return fire with two of his legally owned firearms. The store owner was able to strike one of the suspects multiple times, while the other suspect reportedly fled. The injured suspect, identified as 26-year-old Jamar Hasham of Hartford, was treated at the scene and then transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. The store owner was also treated on the scene for his gunshot wound to his lower back and then transported to a local hospital with non-life-threatening injuries.
Well, thanks, Colonel. There's lots of good stuff in here, so let's get cracking. First, let's talk about why the store owner won this gunfight against 2-to-1 odds. Over the past 200 years of gunfighting, we've learned that the first person to score a critical hit almost always wins the gunfight. A critical hit is defined as any wound to the central nervous system or a major organ. That could mean the brain, the spine, or lung, heart, liver, or kidney. Those are all potentially fatal wounds. Once you wound someone critically, two things happen. First, their body is damaged and they're losing blood, so their ability to take the fight to you degrades. Second, psychologically, things change as well. Going into the fight, they felt 10 feet tall and bulletproof and were probably not in fear for their life, simply because they didn't expect the victim to fight back. But when you shoot someone critically, most people panic and are reminded of their own mortality. That's why the second person fled in this story. A study of Civil War battles tells us that when a defensive position is attacked with overwhelming force, the initial charge must be broken by inflicting huge damage on the attacker. Once that happens, the attack falters and the rest retreat. The store owner was outnumbered 2-to-1, but even the odds with stiff resistance. The remaining attacker fled, no longer confident he could prevail. Let's face it, 50% casualties, even if you win, is considered a Pyrrhic victory. And why did the store owner survive and the attacker did not? That's simple. A wound to the lower back is not considered critical. 80% of people shot by handguns survive, provided they get immediate emergency medical care. The superior marksmanship of the store owner, coupled with his warrior mindset, is what decided the outcome of this battle. So Front Lines of Freedom salutes this Hartford store owner for his ability to fight through the pain and fear and still make critical hits on the attacking criminal. May God bless him as he recovers from his wound.
Yes, sir. Our movie of the month is A Homeless Teen Meets a Deafblind Man Who Changes His Life Forever. It's great. We just reviewed it, but you can still go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can still watch it for free. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, General Jerry Boykin will join us to discuss our need to return our nation to being a nation under God. Then Terry Ranger Johnson will share about veteran injuries and what he's doing to help. And Colonel Scott Fisher will present the Officers Christian Fellowship. It's an outreach to everyone in the military community. And Wayne and Andre will present Face the Fight. It's a move to deal with veteran suicides. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you will not get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. And this as we recognize our nation's Independence Day. Dismissed.